Yeah.
And that total voter count is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Does anyone in our master's class have done a thorough study on worship?
No, I don't believe so. I suggested one topic nobody took up yet on examining the modes and methods of worship and so forth throughout the scriptures.
I was looking at it the night, and I thought it was quite fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at all the different words for praise and worship.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that might be something worthwhile.
Sure. I think it would definitely be, especially in view of the dancing before the Lord and stuff that's going on now. I think it would be really worthwhile.
I knew that. The word hoda, it don't you give thanks?
Mm-hmm.
It's from, arguably from hoda, right?
From what?
On one note.
Yeah. You think?
To have a curious relationship with that hoda to know.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. There is a connection.
Have, those, well, Aleph and Hey and I and innings for the federals and stuff, they seem to be somewhat related.
Yeah, that idea, it may be come together in the idea of acknowledging something, you know, really acknowledging it. You know, when you get thanks, you really, you know, or making a person aware that you know, what they've done for you and so forth and appreciate it.
Lack of thanks is usually lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Mm-hmm. True knowledge. Yep. That's right. Sure. Okay. Let's see, do we have any other candidates for people?
Then
we have 3 and 5. 4.
About
4.
I think Eric's around.
So yeah, he should
be here. John, you're still here after you graduated. Yeah. Well,
this will
happen. Yeah, you
just didn't run off.
This is what I have to say.
Yeah.
This is master's question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do they let you have credit for both an undergraduate and graduate for the taking degree? Huh?
They upgraded.
Oh.
Full master's credits because they're technically under the master's program.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but you were able to count.
I checked with that.
Yeah. That's an efficient way to do it then. You get double credit.
Half of it done by the time you get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way to do it.
And, you know, it really would, to do it the other way would seem as kind of silly anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, you have to maintain the same grade point average to make it count. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So,
it
would be
kind of. Okay. Don't forget tomorrow, grammar translation quiz. Mostly translation, but I have some questions on the verbal Hindiyatis in lesson 48. And I told you yesterday, first of all, you need to know what the word Hindiyatis literally means. And huh? Okay.
Got in just in time before I said anything significant. Good. The word Hindiyatis comes from three Greek words, hen, dia, and dusin. And so I just thought I'd, for your information, put those down. Hen, dia, and dusin. So that's what it means, one, through, two. So idea of one meaning through two words. We're using two words to get one meaning. Yes?
The audience uses two
meanings. I think Dusan is probably accusative here. I think Dusan is one that doesn't have any, it's all the same, you know, it's not declined. I think there's maybe a couple forms. I can remember in that one. You can check Sketches. I think he's got the chart on it. Might have been only two different forms or something, and they're all of them looked alike. You might double check that just for curiosity. I would guess this would be accusative here. But it may be the same for genitive, too, for that one. I'm not sure.
Susie and Dave.
Okay. Do they give a full form for?
Susie.
Okay.
Do all. Susie.
Okay. That's Dave. The
Dave,
I think, is probably.
They probably.
Yeah. I think they may just have used these three words and not.
I'm not sure. There might have been use of the dative with the genitive, with the DR or something that they're using there. Anyway, that's what it comes from. You don't have to worry about that for Greek grammar anyway.
No verbal handy.
Well, there's I think you'll see the term associated with Greek sometimes, but it's probably from Hebrewisms, you know, that would come through. Yeah, all right. We'll come up with another name for it. Yeah. Okay, so you'll need to know that information. You need to know how to describe what verbal hindiatis is in Hebrew. Just, you know, the fact that one meaning is coming from two verbs. And then I told you to be familiar with these basic examples here as far as verbal hindiatis. In other words, I won't throw anything at you that's not in these examples. So if you review those and understand those, you'll be in good shape. Okay, and then the translation in those sections. So that'll be for tomorrow. For today, we want to finish up lesson 48, so you have all the information on that. And we left off in verse 19. On page 241, and John was just starting that as the bell rang, as I recall. So we'll let him finish it. You can even start over if you want. I can't remember what word you left off on. Okay. Okay. Good. Yeah, I did real well. It shall come to pass, or it will be that everyone, that isn't really said there, but you almost have to understand it. It shall come to pass, everyone who goes outside from the doors of your house, or goes from the doors of your house to the outside, his blood is upon his head, is on his head, or in his head, and we shall be innocent, and everyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head, if a hand is upon you. Okay, or everyone who will be with you in the house. It's actually an imperfect form, but imperfect can be translated present or future, depending on the context.
Is that used that way idiomatically for, in just this case or another case?
No, it seems to be used quite frequently in the idea of opposition or something, and things against, you know, his blood shall be, but as far as upon his head, that kind of idea. In this last sense of, you know, his hand being against him, it's pretty commonly used in that kind of thing. I'm not so sure, though, about the other one where his blood is in his head. And obviously, you don't want to think of it in a real literal sense, but I think it's it's his responsibility. I think it's got kind of the idea.
It would be, just
authority, responsibility, and so forth. And the shedding of that blood is his responsibility. It's upon his head. That's kind of the way we mean it, too.
Mm-hmm. So we were talking about earlier in the year, we're talking about the primary meaning of sin.
Mm-hmm.
But is this more like a Greek preposition where, like, the literal idea of some Greek words, like ametha, could be with, but in a certain way, it's also after. Right. So is there actually like two or three root meanings to this?
Well, I don't know. I think there's still one root meaning, but you have to consider root meaning plus context and other things. That'll qualify it. Oh, I think so. In that realm, you know, his blood is in the realm of his head. And as far as, you know, the guilt, where the guilt is to be assigned.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I like to think of it. I think it's quite analogous to what the Greek does. And if you think of the root meaning and then consider the context and the idiom in addition to that, and the fact that they're probably conceptualizing it, and they've got a different idiom for it than we do, to them, they're not thinking of it as the way we do. They're thinking of a picture. His blood is in his head. In other words, it's the shedding of his blood is his own responsibility. It's in the realm of his responsibility. It's in his head.
I know now, as I'm reading, in certain instances, when I come to a place where blood is sucked onto a word,
mm-hmm.
just by the context, when I see it, I think on because of the context. I
mm-hmm.
I see all this context.
Right.
Going to be
right. Exactly. Yeah, that's what's happening. And that's proper because what you're doing is you're understanding the thought in Hebrew, pulling that over into English. And now in English we would say on rather than in. So.
And I still go back and write a little picture.
Sure.
When I first see it, because it's on
you. Yeah. You get used to certain idioms after a while, too, and you get used to the way English translates them. And so you kind of think that way, too. But I think it's a mistake just to think that the word buh can mean in, on, at, upon, anything you want it to mean, you know. That's kind of the position some people come to. But what they do is that they'll see the preposition, they'll look at the many different ways it was translated in English, and then conclude it means all those things. And a better conclusion would be that it's translated that way, not that it means that. And the translation of a word is not necessarily dependent only upon the meaning of a given word. It's dependent upon the meaning of the word within its context, and there are cues from the context that you're picking up as well in your terms of your translation that may come out in a word in English, but that were seen only in case functions or something like that in the other language. So that's something we've got to keep in mind, too, is that we're translating things that are sometimes not expressed in a word form. They're expressed in Hebrew. You know, you've got clause relationships sometimes. The clause relationship will result in a certain translation. And it's not because of any word there. It's because of the way the clauses were put together. Or in Greek, you may have no preposition at all, and you may just have a dative case, and you may translate it in. Even though there wasn't any word in there in the Greek at all, but you're translating in because that's the English picture of that concept that's being portrayed there by a case function, not by a preposition. And so, you know, if a person's going to be a real literalist, he would have zero being translated by in English, nothing being translated by in English, and then you could conclude that nothing in Greek means in English. Well, obviously it doesn't. It just means that there's an instance in which there's nothing there but a dative case form. And there's no word there, it's just a case form. And then that's being translated because the context is in. So, in other words, I'm saying you can't be strict one for one, word for word. It just doesn't work.
Not one to one, not two.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Is it calculus term?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In these instances where if we started, we're in a perfect tense from Wahaya,
mm-hmm.
where I assumed it was a predication from with the rosho. And so I said it will be on his head instead of is on his head.
Yes.
Okay, and on his head.
Well, yes, that would be fine. That would be fine because you're just trying to pick up the flavor of the thing. Yeah, it's it will come to pass that whosoever goes from the doors of your house, his blood will be upon his head. Now, because you've set the whole thing in the future tenor from the start, that'd be perfectly all right. Yeah. In fact, I'll put that down as an option right in here. Because if you take it, you know, it kind of depends on how you set up the thing, whether you're looking at it the present or whether you're looking at it the future, and. Doesn't make a whole lot of difference. His blood will be upon his head, or his blood is on his head. We know it's not as on his head. It's not on his head right now. It's going to be, but it's as good as so. In other words, you're setting up a maxim and so forth that it's going to be adhered to.
In another sense, it is on his head because it's still his responsibility one way or another.
Mm-hmm. And he's forming his decisions now, you know, that he's going to carry out later. Okay. Verse 20, then, unless there's another question here. Tony, do you want to take that? Short.
Sorry, I had a hard time trying to get it done.
Okay.
Wa'im Tagidi.
Tagidi, mm-hmm.
F. Yavarenu. Zay. Wahayino.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mishbuathek. Okay. Well, let's see, Mishavuathek. Yeah, it would be Mishavuathek. Anybody tell me why? Yeah, you got two Q's here. There's a Dagation the Sheen, and there's no Begat Kefat Dagation the Bait. Which there would be if there was a closed syllable before it. Okay, Mishavu Afek.
Asher.
Hifil to reveal or tell a few chapters back. And this is again the problem you're having recognizing these forms is because we don't see feminine singular forms very often. And he's talking to the woman. He says, if you will reveal. Or if you tell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Comes from one nun and then.
If you tell, well, I don't know what to do with this. Okay. It's the word this.
Mm-hmm.
But is this your words or?
Well, yes, it's ours. This our word is actually singular. This our matter, this our word, this our business, is like when King James or somebody translates. If you tell this matter of ours, this business of ours, this thing of ours, this word of ours, always be matter or business would be the best. If you tell this matter of ours, or reveal it. In other words, this whole thing, this whole spy trip, you know, and their whole mission, if she reveals who they are. You tell this matter of ours. Here's again Zeh without the article, which is unusual. You mentioned that earlier. You usually expect Hazeh there. Hyinu is converted perfect form, giving imperfect meaning. Because of the imperfect you started with. This is from Hayah. Mm-hmm. Again, you probably haven't...
See why it has an ending on it. You can't say...
Well, it's just a first-person plural ending on Hayah. The three hay, so get that extra yod in there. So Hayinu would be... we will be... Actually, we were, but, you know, it's converted, so it's we will be. So if you tell this business of ours, then we will be Naki'im. We will be innocent.
I was thinking
power. Yeah. Oh, no. You're probably thinking of an infinitive construct with a suffix on it or something. This is just a verb form. This is just a verb form with its appropriate ending. I don't think we've run into that particular form before. I don't recall seeing it. So then we will be innocent. That word was given above. Mishavua, I think. Remember Shavua? So one of the words you had in the vocab list. Oath. So, and then min, the mem is from min, preposition min. Mm-hmm. From your oath. Okay, well, it's actually you caused us to swear, which you caused us to swear. It is from the verb to swear, but it's that you caused us to swear. There's a suffix on here, and they you know, it's an object suffix, and they give it to you there. So this is equivalent to Othanu, you see. Hishba'ath, Othanu. So Hishba'ath would be to cause to swear. So, and that'd be second person feminine singular, so which you caused us to swear. Okay, so the whole thing would be, but if you reveal this business, the business of ours, this matter of ours, then we shall be innocent from your oath, which you caused us to swear. Okay. Any other questions on that? It was short, but it was meaty there. Okay, verse 21, Eric. The first one is, it'd be according to your words, as your words. Vachem is the second person suffix. So, according to your words, Cain who?
According to your words, thus it is.
Mm-hmm. According to your words, thus it is, or thus it should be. In other words, she's kind of proclaiming, yeah, so be it. Something like that might be better in this context. According to your words, so be it. Or thus it is.
I thought you could connect Kanbu to the beginning, like having the culture.
Oh, yeah, you could.
So she said, according to your words or something, but I thought
you can't.
Yeah.
Oh, you were taking who as a subject?
Yeah.
itself? Oh, yeah, it wouldn't work, though, because, yeah, like you said, this is, yeah. And then with the Macase joining with kin like that, it's thus it is or something like that. It's really kind of put together as a unit.
That's right, it's
man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she sent them forth, and they went out, and she bound his father's bed in the
womb. Okay, good. So, and she said, according to your word, so be it, or so thus it is. And she sent them out, and they went, and she bound a line of scarlet in the window. The cord of scarlet, or whatever. Scarlet cord.
Thread,
yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah. It means a line, that I don't know if...
Is that what is schlock? That's a PL.
Let's see. I'll have to check it here.
That
sure looks like it, yeah. Just that we kind of thrust them out, sent them out with haste.
So she told
me
she
came out. Yeah, right. Yeah. Get going. Yeah. Thrust them out. Good point. What's that?
Is it A scarlet line?
The D line is scarlet. And so let me check it with what I have. yeah. The construct and then Hashanai is a. It's got the article. Shani. Be the form. I think it's got the idea from double, from two. The idea of double dyed, so forth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not too many words are like that. But you had pre and. Fruit. There's several words. There's a class of words that do that. Like Kaliv or Vessel. Okay. Verse 22. And who's up next? Bryce.
Vajayvaku Vajayabohu Pahara Vajayashavu Sham Talisha Yamayim Yanim Ad Shavu Harodafim Vaya Va Peshu Harodafim Vakal Adarek Kalo Masau.
Okay.
And they went and they came to the mountain and they dwelt there 3 days. Until the pursuing ones returned, and the pursuing ones searched in all the roads, but they did not find
him. Okay. Good. You can probably put a them there, yeah. He did not find him. Okay. And they went out and came to the mountains and dwelt there 3 days. Mountain singular, and they dwelt there 3 days. Until the pursuers, the ones pursuing them, returned, and the ones pursuing them searched in all the way. All the road, whatever, but they did not find, and then put a dam there, probably. Okay, good. Any questions there? That one's pretty straightforward. Okay, 23, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Waya Avaru.
Waya Avaru. El Yehoshua. Benyun. Waya Avaru. Lo Echa. Hamut. Zaho.
And if it's literally all the things that found them, yeah. So it's all the things that befell them or all the things that happened to them, something like that. All the things that found them. Let's see. Yeah, I'm not so old. Looks like, yeah, all the things finding them, yeah. It looks like a plural participle feminine.
That's his call,
right? Almost have to say all the things that found them. All the finding them things. Yeah, it's making an adjective into a substantive. So participles are often used as substantives, so that's what you have to have. All the finding them things, something like that. Why it's feminine as opposed to masculine, I'm not sure. See, they don't have a neuter to choose from, so sometimes you see them feminine, sometimes you see them masculine. Probably depends on the mood the writer's in, I suppose. Okay, 24. Peter.
Wayomru El Yehoshua Ki Nathan Yawa Veyadenu Esko Ha'aretz Vagam Namogu Ko Yoshbe Ha'aretz.
Okay.
And they said to Joshua that Yahweh has given in, and I have two in parentheses, into our hands all the land, and also all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before us.
Okay, good. And they said to Joshua that or for Yahweh gave into our hand, it's hand singular there, Yadenu. A little tricky, though. You'd have just a teriol instead of the other. So into our hand, all the land and also all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before us. Okay, good. Any questions there? All right.
I have a question on a more general topic. When you said in Greek class, you thought as far as Greek, the most important area theologically was preposition.
Well, one of the major areas, yeah, one of the major areas.
Verb
tenses. Yeah, especially areas that have been abused the most, one of the most abused areas. Therefore, one of the ones we need to study the most. Yeah.
I was wondering, in Hebrew, were areas in the Bible where we get theology from.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the biggest mistake that made in those
places? That's a good question. Doesn't seem to be a whole lot of real glaring ones. Just because I think the main reason is that Hebrew is largely narrative in the Old Testament, and you're not really getting into a lot of complicated, maxims and theological descriptions and so forth. About the things
some of the end-time eschatology.
Okay, probably one major thing would be the interpretation of the Waah consecutive and the differences of opinion on that. Whether it's to be taken as a converted form or whether you project your mind into the sense of it and so forth. And that to my mind, is not that much of a controversy. As soon as you see what's going on in Hebrew, whether you define it one way or the other is not that important. Some insist that we've got to convert the meaning of it and say that the meaning is just reversed. Others saying the reason it's reversed to us, the way we would translate it, is because they are looking at it differently. And I think we need to keep in mind that they are looking at it differently. And then in English, we're going to translate. If we're going to make any sense out of it, we have to make a translation that's appropriate to English. So it's kind of on whether you're oriented toward English or oriented toward Hebrew, whether you make that decision. But you will find in the books a lot of controversy about that. You know, one author would argue this way, one author would argue that way. As far as, though, mistakes in translations and so forth go, there's really not a whole lot there. I think most of it is just a matter of obscure. If the word is obscure, you know, some will take it from one root, some will take it from another root and give differences. It's mostly that kind of thing, mostly vocabulary, the things that I've run into. Not a lot of different, huh? Yeah, glossing over the idioms. Yeah, glossing the idioms. King James is pretty good with Hebraisms. You know, they come across fairly well. But a lot of the newer translations are probably going to gloss those more. And then some other things. There are things that, well, plural of majesty, for example, with unfolding revelation of God topic. And that's something usually it's not so much the scholars that have a problem. It's the ministers that write books. And then there's, you know, once in a while you see something like in Genesis 2:3 where it says, which God created to make, in the literal Hebrew, and they translate God created and made. Sometimes it just doesn't make any sense to them, so they change the translation, you know. So I think that might be part of it.
I define like in Greek, it's almost like they tend to gloss in Greek, like they say, well, in could be on, could
yeah.
be around.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like in Hebrew is the opposite problem. Someone come around and they'll say, well, this is definitely this.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in Hebrew, it's like, well, you can't be dogmatic in Hebrew.
Yeah. I know. That's an interesting point. Yeah, good observation. In Greek, they tend to generalize the specific, and in Hebrew, they tend to specify the general. You know, in other words, to come down too narrow. It's because of the difference in the nature of the languages. Greek lends itself. Greek is loaded with lots of specific case forms and specific forms for everything, whereas Hebrew is, you know, generally your forms are not declined except for your verbs. You don't have declensions for nouns. You use prepositions, pile several prepositions together to make other ones. They build words from words. And then because of the clause structures and the relationship between the clauses and these temporal modifiers and things like that, you've got to begin to start thinking in the mode of Hebrew, and then you find, you know, a person will say, this is what it means, but it's not really quite that precise. I think it's a good observation. But it's just that the nature of the languages is different. They're two different kinds of languages. I think they're good to study. That's probably one of the reasons why I've never noticed too much problem with students getting Greek and Hebrew confused. In other words, mixing it up and putting a Hebrew verb in for the Greek and so forth. They just don't do that. If you took Spanish and French together, you'd probably have a lot more trouble with that because the languages are so similar. But these languages are so completely different that it's not only in terms of the script, but the syntax, the grammar, everything is set up differently. And only parallels we see at all are probably because of Hebraisms that are translated over into Greek. So it's a good observation. I think what it boils down to is dishonesty. In other words, not really caring. Most of the places where I found that they tend to, like Lambin tends to soften it, or Getchus also, say you can't be so dogmatic, or gives this idea, or the aorist participle can mean antecedent action, or simultaneous action, or something. If you get down to the bottom of it, there's usually a verse someplace that they need to have it that way in order to keep their theology. It's not just a matter of, you know, just an arbitrary thing. There's something way down inside. Some of them may not even recognize it themselves, but that's been a consistent pattern. That's the kind of thing we want to avoid. Okay, any other questions? Yes, Peter.
In this translation exercise, with kindness, chesed used adverbially, I don't remember.
Which verse are we looking at?
Well, the first verse.
Okay. Oh, yes. Yes, you could probably translate it that way. It's actually a noun, but it's being used in a pretty much an adverbial sense. Just the way it's said.
And that wouldn't be wrong,
right? Yeah, because, no. I have dealt with you. There's just no preposition that's used there. You would kind of expect a preposition. Dealt with you in kindness or with kindness or something like that. So if you said dealt with you kindly, that'd be fine. See, an adjective doesn't normally, even if you call it an adjective, it's still an adverbial function. Because it's not modifying any particular noun, neither is it really standing by itself as a substantive. So either in kindness or kindly, so forth, would be fine.
Putting a proposition like
this
changes the flavor
mm-hmm.
a little bit if you did that. And it may be intentional, I don't know.
Yeah.
Happy, but
it may be intentionally left out to broaden it a little bit.
What did he see? It's like what I've given to you is mm-hmm. kindness as opposed to I'm being kind
mm-hmm.
to you.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
Yes. And you can even consider it doing kindness, doing with you kindness. Kind of the idea, because I'm doing with you kindness, I'm doing things, and you know, perhaps could be considered an object of the verb of doing, to do kindness. It's a little tough though, it's not a real black and white case. So you could think of it as a noun and consider it the object of doing, like doing kindness. That might be a bit of the simplest way to look at it. Or just consider it an adverb modifying it, or consider it adjective probably would the adjective aspect would come out in English translation. Well, no, that wouldn't even need to deal kindly. That's still coming out as an adverb. So I don't have really any adjective sense at all. Yes?
There was one word I missed, and I think that when the men come out of the mountain go to Joshua.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the two men
returned? Returned, yeah. That's a shorter, it's a kind of a defective form or shortened up form. It's a adjusive type form, shortened form. Mm-hmm. So your shurik is shortened down to a kibbutz. Vayashuva, vayashuvu. Verse 23, first word. Vayashuvu. They probably gave that to you. Some of them, they gave you the charts for the jesses, and other times in the converted form, sometimes they didn't, so I can't remember in this one if they did. Be back in your chapter on the hollow verbs. Just a curiosity, so I found it for you. And they show one for Sham, but it's got a segol, so it isn't quite the same. It's the same pattern, except it's got a segol. Usually they don't show you the adjusted forms for the plural anyway. You don't see those very often. So you might have to look that up, but you can usually recognize it from that shurik, you know, it's pretty. Okay, Hophal, chapter 49. Go ahead and start that. Through with it, of course. And tomorrow the test should take the whole hour, so. The Hophal is just the passive form of the Hifil, which we've been looking at for a long time. So section 175, as in the PL-Pual relationship, there is for each Hifil verb a passive counterpart of the type called Hophal. The form is characterized by a U vowel in the first syllable and an A vowel in the second. Now that may not seem too logical because it's Hophal, it's not Hufal. You know, why a U in the first? But it's just because in the paradigm and with certain of the irregular verbs, you see a U sound could show up quite a bit. So the exact nature of the first vowel depends on the root type as seen from the following synopsis. So the real nature of that first vowel is going to depend on the root. For the regular ones, it's just an O sound. In fact, it's Kamus Khatuf. This is one of the places you'll see lots of Kamus Khatufs. So look at our regular paradigm here. In the perfect, we've got Hishmid for the regular verb, and that was your Hifil form for the perfect, to recall that. Now the Hophal for the perfect would be Hoshmat, and that's a Kamus Khatuf in the first syllable, closed syllable, silent Shua following it. Hoshmat, the imperfect, Yoshmat, and the participle, Moshmat. So it's kind of nice. Hoshmat, Yoshmat, Moshmat. Everything's the same except the first letter. In the gutturals, one gutturals, that Amid and the perfect Ho'omav, Yo'omav, Mo'omav, for the participle. The one Nun, that Higgiv, and for the Hifil, we've got Hugaz for the perfect, and there's your U vowel that he mentioned, comes in that first. Hugav, Yugav, and Mugav. Okay, and three Aleph, Himtzi in the Hifil becomes Homsa in the perfect, Yomsa and Momsa. So you just get the quiescent aleph and the comments there, the lengthened comments at the end. Pretty straightforward.
In the one nun, are we seeing the nun assimilated in
Yes.
The dagation,
the gimel there is a assimilation of the nun. Yeah. Okay. The one yod, one wow, ho reeve becomes in the hofal. Horad, and that one's going to be a little bit tricky because, or Hurad, excuse me, Hurad, and Urad, and Murad. Just at a quick glance, it's going to look very similar, but you've got the Shurek instead of the Cholam. That helps some. Three Hay, Hivna becomes Hovna, and Yovne, and Movne. Notice there is a change in the last syllable in the imperfect and the participle. You get the Sigol Hay, and that's pretty typical of what we've seen with three Hays anyway. Hollow verbs, Hekim becomes Hukam, Yukam, Mukam. So that pattern follows all the way through. In the geminate, Hesev becomes Husav, Yusav, Musav. You can see why this chapter is a little simpler, because you know those are all the nasty ones, and they come out pretty nice in Hofal. Just turns out that the kind of vowels you have in Hofal don't generate a lot of complications. So the following samples of their inflection will suffice for the remainder, for the rest of the paradigms here. He's not giving a full paradigm either, but for your Hoshmad there, for your regular one, Hoshmad, Hoshmada, Hoshmadta, Hoshmad, etc., you can just follow the paradigm there. For the one guttural, Ho'omad, excuse me, Ho'om, Ho'omda, Ho'omazda, Ho'omazda, etc. It's pretty much a logical progression here.
That's strange. Ho'omda.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand why the second one is
Yeah, this came up a while back. It was just a little statement of it. What happens when you get, in effect, you're trying to shorten the next one to a schwa, and it just doesn't work. They won't. So you've already got in the first pattern there. You've got a kamatz chatuf where the chatuf kamatz chatuf where the schwa would have been in that ho'omaz. And so you didn't get a closed syllable in the first syllable. And in the next one, you would have gotten two shawas in a row again, in effect, because the kamath katuf is a shawa, in effect. I mean, it's really a shawa, but it's a shawa that goes on a guttural. So you would have gotten two shawas in a row here, and one of them being vocal. Well, in effect, it is the chatef kamas chatuf. The chatef kamas chatuf is equivalent to it. Okay, I know you're talking about that form, but I'm trying to get the connection here. Now, you start with the previous form, and you've got a chatef kamas chatuf on the ayin there. That's effectively a shawa.
Right.
Okay. Now, if you look at hoshmata or hoshmada, the form across from it, hoshmada for the feminine form. You had a closed syllable. You closed down your first syllable. And so you had a silent shawa. Well, you can't have a silent shawa on an ayin. So you have to instead go ahead and keep a vocal shawa. But that would put a vocal shawa next to a vocal shawa, and that won't work. So what they do is they lengthen that to the full vowel corresponding to the short vowel, and you get a two full kamas chatus before the name there. It's back there somewhere. I wish I can't remember exactly the spot. Yeah, it might have been back in the perfect verbs, and probably with the
two gutturals.
It might have been in the two gutturals for those, because we've got another syllable involved here. There was a place where we had, we ran into the same kind of thing, where you got two, I think it was two pothocks you got or something instead of...
The domino effect.
Yeah, the domino effect, yeah.
Three dominoes, I think, page 43.
Page 43? Okay, good. Okay, something similar happens with that one in the 2FS form. See, there's two pothocks in a row there. Whereas before, you see, in the other forms, you get two shawas closing the word out. So it's analogous to that. Not exactly the same thing, but it's analogous to it. Okay. So there, that's the perfect forms. The imperfect, pretty straightforward. Yashmad, Tosh, Toshmadi, Toshmad. Toshmavna and so forth. Question?
Does those little dots mean that there are more forms?
Yes, it means et cetera. No, rest of the paradigm. How's he setting that up? Oh, I think that might be just a type of... You shouldn't have the dots in the first two forms there. Just in the last one to indicate the rest of them. Compared to what he's done down there. No, I think he's probably just giving you selected forms in the paradigm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's happening. So there's forms between that first one and the second one, and that's what is happening there. In other words, he's just giving you a few select forms so you know what the thing does and all the unusual.
I think it's not the most common thing we'll see.
Oh, no, you're not going to see a lot of them. Whole falls, you know, it's not one. But you'll see enough of them to necessitate learning something about it. But Hofal is pretty easy to recognize. At least once you get to the point of recognizing Kamas Katuf. You know, if you can recognize it's a Kamas Katuf, and how do you recognize that? Well, just by the fact there's a Shawa following it in a closed syllable. That's the trick. All of these are beginning with closed syllables. The only ones you run into any problem that way with would be the one gutturals. And there you can usually recognize those pretty well, too. When you see two these in a row, especially if you see a Khatif Kamas in that second position where you're normally going to see, you know that's a Kamas Katuf, and then the one before it's going to have to be a Kamas Katuf. So they're pretty easy to recognize.
Why did we say it was characterized by the U-vowel?
I've wondered about that, too. Yeah. About the only ones you've got a U-vowel are the one Nun and the one Yod and Wow. The rest of them have all got, well, the Hollow's got a U-vowel, and the Geminate's got a U-vowel. I guess it's probably out of the paradigms here, you've got the Hollow, the Geminate, that's two. You've got the one Yo, that's three. You've got the one Nun, that's four. Four out of the eight here, or nine, have a U vowel. So I don't know. That's probably what he's concluded it on. I'd probably opt for the old vowel, Kamas Katuf vowel there myself, but that's what he's chosen there. Now he may be, there may be some connections with etymology of the language or something that he's using to weigh that with too, but as far as forms are concerned, this is what we have. So that's not the best statement there, I don't think. I would rather not you be thinking of always a U vowel, it's always a hofal, it's an O vowel, but sometimes with the regular forms it comes out as a U. Participles are no problem, especially with that short vowel, short syllable in the first. Closed syllable, then you just, you know, makes it easy for the rest of it. Moshmada, Moshmeda is the segulate form for the fem. Moshmadim, etc. Moshmadot. Okay, as the passive of the hifil, as far as syntax is concerned now, the hofal offers no problems in translation when the hifil is simply a transitive verb. So, if it's a transitive verb, of course, any transitive verb you can convert to a passive. And so, Hishmid, he destroyed. Hoshmat, he was destroyed. Just a passive form. Hishlik, he threw. Hoshlak, he was thrown. Horeth, he brought down. And Hurad, he was brought down. So just active passive, the only distinction there. But when the hifil verb is capable of a double object construction, it is the causative portion of the meaning which is rendered passive in the hofal. In other words, if you've got a hifil verb that means he caused to do this, if you want to convert it into passive, he was caused to do this. In other words, it's the idea of the cause that is being made passive. So the actual action might still appear in infinitive kind of an idea, caused to something. Now, he was caused to do this. So he still may have done the action. In other words, there still may be a direct object. You can have a direct object for a hofall verb by saying he was caused to destroy this thing or whatever. And the thing is the thing that's destroyed. And whether the thing is destroyed directly or was being caused by somebody else, you know, it's still getting destroyed. So it's still receiving action, either way you look at it. Well, we're out of time here. We'll stop.